You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Good Monday morning to you. Mike McNamara in for a Monday edition of All Marine Radio here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Dealing with some computer issues this morning. Yeah, sometimes, you know, the whole computer thing, problematic. Don't ask me why. They don't want to behave sometimes. Somebody sneaks a software update and jacks stuff up on you. So anyway, luckily that I dealt with them. You know, I just saw a picture of the president, President Bush's casket. And I will tell you this. Things you see that irritate you. Actually, the shot was of his casket, and I don't know if that's his service dog laying in front of the casket on the floor. A picture that we, our tribe, has seen not a few times over the course of last 17 years. And but the flag that adorns his casket, it hadn't been ironed. And you're looking at it, and you're seeing all the folds in it. You're seeing wrinkles in the flag. And you're thinking, who the fuck is in charge of that shit? Anyway, things you notice that you really wish you rather would have noticed. I mean, come on. It's the President of the United States. What the hell? You know? I have some things to say about him, but you know, and I've never started the program like this, but I feel like I should. And I think he was, in many ways, a watershed president for the country. I think that it was after him that that we transitioned as a country to this scorched earth bullshit that we all endure now, where there is no compromise in a democracy. And to quote a former United States senator who's been a guest on my radio shows from the state of North Dakota, his name is Byron Dorgan. He said, Mac, I believe Churchill is quoted as saying, compromise is the lubricant of democracy. So where does democracy go without compromise? Answer, no place. So I've never started a program like this, but I think I will today. And this is in memory of one of the great public servants that our nation has ever known. from his service as a naval aviator in World War II to the many lives he touched throughout his long extended service to the nation, and not only as president, but in his afterlife, how he continued to touch people, inspire people, and be, along with his wife, Barbara, who passed away earlier this year, just the epitome of graciousness, of service. And so, so this is dedicated to former President George Herbert Walker Bush, and to a life well lived, and hoping that maybe he inspires, and I say this, I mean, in my heart, knowing full good and well that this is a pipe dream at best, but hoping that his example inspires others to throw off this yoke of ultra partisanship that we all endure today. You know, you see parts of it when you see last week when you saw younger Democrats, you know, being interviewed, talking about they want to see change in the Democratic Party. They are tired of the old, the way it's done. And I would say that the same thing applies for the Republican Party. The Republican Party's no different. That they've been sent specifically with a message from their districts that they are tired of playing the game that gets played in Washington these days. And I would submit to you, and I'll talk about it this week, but that game, and there's always been partisanship, but, you know, under President Reagan, you know, we all heard the stories of President Reagan and Tip O'Neill would have a drink, and they would talk about how do we do this, right? And it was the art of allowing the other side to win some, and you won some too, but neither one of you won as much as you wanted to, which is obviously probably the element of a good deal. So, you know, you heard those stories that would happen. And under President Bush, you know, I think you see, and I'll talk about it after my little thing to him, but you saw he had a decision to make. And we'll talk about that decision and that decision's effect on him and why that's a watershed moment in the political life of our country. And it's a sad watershed moment. So this is dedicated to former naval aviator George Herbert Walker Bush, the 41st President of the United States, who passed away late last week. The Lieutenant J.G. George H.W. Bush, the U.S. Naval Institute did an interview with him. It lasts about 10 minutes. And as we kick off a week in which he will be laid to rest, it's interesting to hear him talk about his service to the nation and his service during World War II. So here he is in his own words. He did this interview in April of 2007. The United States Naval Institute has a series they call Americans at War, and this is part of that series. I promise you. It's coming. The placard, there's a series of placards. As a naval aviator, a Lieutenant J.G. Bush bailed out after his plane caught fire and fortunately was picked up by the submarine USS Einbeck, Finback, SS-230.
Well, on September 2nd, 1944, my torpedo bomber and I took off from the USS San Jacinto. We were part of Task Force 58. The very next day, we were to move south under Halsey's fleet to be part of Task Force 38. And so I knew that this, after this mission, our ship would head south, a couple of thousand miles away. In any event, it was a clear day. Best of my memory, I was just turned 20, and I knew it was going to be a fairly dangerous mission because the day before, our air group, our squadron, VT-51, had flown over Chichijima, and we'd encountered a fair amount of flak. So I knew it was going to be tough, but this was what our duty was, no question about it. And the thing that was different on this flight is my friend, who was the gunnery officer, a fellow Yale graduate, came up to me and said, "Can I fly with you, Ted White?" And I said, "Sure, if you want to. I mean, but you got to get permission from the skipper of our squadron." He said, "Well, he had no problem with it." So my gunner did not fly, and Ted White did. Anyway, we get over we climbed to 10,000 or 12,000. And our mission was to drop four 500-pound bombs on a radio station on Chichijima. And the second two-man flights, two of them, the leader, our skipper, and then I had one a guy named Milt Moore on my wing. And we dove over, pushed over at about that. You feel like you're going straight down, but it was about, I think, 40 degrees or maybe less. But it just felt like a dive bomb. Anyway, we got in there. The flak was very heavy. You could just see it and hear it almost around you. As I was two-thirds of the way down, I felt this whole plane jolt forward, and soon it was a lot of smoke. I looked on the wings of the plane after I pulled out, and you could see the flames going down where the wings folded on the TBF, and I knew I was in serious trouble. I did manage to, before pulling out, to go out to try to get to safety. I did manage to drop the bombs. Did what I was paid to do, what I wanted to do for our country. Then I went out to sea. I saw that I couldn't possibly fly this plane back to the ship, it was all happening very fast. When I saw the flame along the wing, which is right where the fuel tanks are, I said, "I better get out of here." Turned the plane to the right, to take the wind off the slip, to take the slipstream off the door where the crewman's supposed to get out. Made about a 180, and then I told them to get out, and then I jumped out myself. It turned out that one of them, fortunately, one of them had gotten out. It was reported by the Japanese and confirmed where he went down, which was a great relief to me, even though I still worry about the loss of those two men to this very day. I made an exit from the plane, dove out onto the wing. I did it very badly. I pulled the ripcord too soon. I hit my head on the tail, the horizontal stabilizer of the TBF, and a glancing blow like this, and bleeding like a stuck pig. And the parachute momentarily hung up on the tail of the plane, and it ripped out some of the panels of the chute. So I fell faster than I normally would have. I dropped into the ocean, and I've managed to get the chute off properly. You're supposed to undo the strap here and then hold your hands up so when you hit the water, the chute will blow away, which it did, right on towards Shichijima. But I had failed to hook my seat pack on, hook my lifeboat onto the parachute. So a fighter plane came, dove down, showed me where that was, and I swam over, got into this life raft, and started paddling as fast as I could to go out to sea. The wind was blowing towards Chichi, and I was blowing towards Chichi also. I swam as fast as I could. I was sick to my stomach. I was scared. I wondered what happened to my crewman. And suddenly I saw this periscope. Hope like hell it was a U.S. submarine. We were in Japanese waters. And it was the USS Finback. They came alongside and picked me up, pulled me onto the deck, and the ship went back down again. The submarine went back down, and that started 30 terrifying days as we stayed on war patrol for 30 days on that submarine, on a voyage which won our skipper of the submarine a Silver Star. So it was a traumatic experience. But no different than a lot of kids went through in World War II. And that's the point I want to make, because people, you know, talk about, well, you're a hero. Well, there's nothing heroic about doing your duty, trying to serve with honor. And there's nothing heroic about getting shot down. I've always wondered at how they honor you if you've been shot down, but if you do what you were supposed to do, land your plane safely back on the ship, you're just another pilot.
One question: how did the sub know you were there? Was it
well? They had life saving subs in.
So the question was: how did the sub know you were there?
If they weren't otherwise occupied, there'd be a submarine, and they'd check in somewhere and say we're in this area. So when I went down, there was the skipper of my squadron used that frequency to tell whatever submarine was listening. This is the pilot's down. Here's where he is. And they just came in. They'd rescued a guy earlier from Iwo Jima, I think it was, or Hahajima, which was another island there. Then me. And then after I was safely on board, we went in and pulled another guy out, Ensign Beckman of the Enterprise. I was just very lucky the submarine was there, because, as I said, this fleet was going south, and I knew that I would be, if somebody didn't pick me up, I would have been captured and killed. They were very brutal on Shichijima.
When you're out on this life raft, after your plane went down and didn't know what happened to you guys, what is a young 20-year-old airman at the time? What, you know, you said you were scared. You know what was going to go on.
You say your prayers. You think about your family. In my case, my mother and my father. You have to worry about the men that didn't get out of the plane. Thank God one of them had. And you just pray that, selfishly, that you'll be all right, that you'll be saved.
And
I was sick to my stomach, and it was traumatic.
After 62 years or some odd years, I understand you always question why me, or people oftentimes in that situation.
Yeah.
Since you've had marriage, children, obviously your career. Does it take a different feel to look back on that now? Does it, or it just is still a question as a young man, why you, and how did that happen?
No.
So the question is, why you, right? The randomness of combat. After all these years and all the things that have happened to him, I don't know if you can hear it that well, but why were you spared?
You always ask that, why me? I asked that when my daughter, innocent little beautiful girl, came down with leukemia. She was 4 years old, pure and innocent, and it was, why us? Why this little girl? And so I think it's understandable that you ask that question. I did back then. And probably would again if there was something as traumatic as that. But I think it's normal. We have great faith in our family. And sometimes you wonder why God acts as he does. And the Lord acts in mysterious ways. You just accept that. You pray about it. You get on with your life. You don't sit around wringing your hands and whining. And so I was blessed in this naval experience, and I wondered, why was I spared when two friends in the plane with me were killed? I don't know the answer.
United States Naval Institute, Lieutenant J.G. George Herbert Walker Bush, United States Naval Reserve, born in 1924, passed away last week, 2018. So good morning to you. We'll talk about him all week. And the point I'll make to you is that when he raised taxes after he said, read my lips, no new taxes, it was a quintessential act of compromising for the better good of the country. I meant to say for the betterment of the country. Or the greater good of the country, and I kind of combined them right there. Yeah. And so when you look at his life, and if you kind of put yourself in his position, and you said, okay, you have the opportunity to burn it down with your democratically controlled House and Senate, or you have an opportunity to compromise, it'll cost you this, you'll get this in return, what are you going to do? I mean, I don't know that George Herbert Walker Bush, the elder, he wasn't made of the stuff that gets us what we have today. He just wasn't wired that way. And if it costs him the presidency, then guess what? So be it. But in the service of his country, which he did most of his life, much of his life, not doing the work of the American people for political sake, not in him. Not in him as a person. And I think after his presidency, you can draw a line. And there's some media stuff that happens with the rise of talk radio, the rise specifically of Rush Limbaugh and a conservative voice across the country, and that begins a trend of polarizing in our politics, of burning it down. Newt Gingrich, who never served a day in his life, becomes Speaker of the House in a Republican wave that takes back the House for the first time, and I can't remember how many years, in, what, 1994? Bill Clinton's first midterm. And so we've been living with this kind of scorched earth in the media, scorched earth in our politics, and I would submit to you maybe the last great act of compromise came from President Bush. And since then, we've been plagued with this scorched earth approach to politics. And I think it's beneath the country. I think if the founding fathers saw it, they would be sorely disappointed. But I think that, you know, sadly for us, if we're counting on the character of the people that we're electing these days to change that tone, right, that would probably be misplaced faith. Sadly, we don't have people like George Bush that serve anymore. And so, I will point back to that. I think that that watershed event, and then the coming of Newt Gingrich, and began the burning it down of Washington, D.C., in a way the Brits could never even have envisioned in 1812. So, with that said, good morning to you. United States Marine Corps Band will make this Monday official. And we'll talk about President Bush. Also, there's some other huge news. And we'll talk about that, too. Suicide claims the life of the commanding officer of the American 5th Fleet in the Middle East, which is stunning and hard to believe. Vice Admiral Scott Sterney, reports are that he committed suicide. No foul play is expected. You know, the last, I think most people that are old enough to remember will remember in 1996 when Admiral Borda committed suicide. It's just stunning, right? You know, we talk about suicide and, you know, whatnot. And so no further information has been released, so that happens over the weekend. And then we have agreed with the Chinese to evidently some kind of 90-day moratorium. I guess more details will be forthcoming, but that's a big deal. I think if you listened to Grant Newsham talk last week, there was great consternation that we would take some small scintilla of a Chinese concession, call it a victory, and then say, okay, we're done. That appears not to have happened. All right? But again, film at 11. So we shall see. And if you're anywhere near the funeral home that's in charge of the remains of President Bush, pick up the phone and tell them, somebody iron the flag, for God's sakes, it's on his casket. Or iron a different one and then swap them out. So, with that said, good morning to you. United States Marine Corps Band does make it official. It's not going to be a great mystery, but the following is dedicated to the 41st President of the United States, who is extremely decent human being to everybody, right? I'll tell you a quick story. When It must have been the winter of 1991, after the election. And I'm teaching at IOC in Quantico. And on the first day of classes, one of the things we did, or it was in the first week, it probably wasn't the first day, but we had to kind of teach lieutenants how to get in and out of a helicopter LZ, right? So over a couple of CH-46s would come, and the pilots would get out, and they would brief the lieutenants about, okay, here's what I need from you. See that nine-line thing? I don't need you. I don't need, like, all elements of the nine-line. I need to know where you're at. I need to know how many packs you got. I need to know if the LZ is hot or cold. So circle these things. And they would just talk pilot stuff. And they'd come over, and as pilots always are, you know, they're as cool can be. Right? And so, so anyway, that's going on. And so I was sitting on a log, watching it, and you're away from the class that's being taught to lieutenants, talking to the other pilots, and so we were having a conversation about the election or something, and then one of them said, you know, the country has no idea what it just did. And, you know, what do you mean? The president and his family are some of the most decent people we've ever met in our lives. And they said, you know, we'll go up to Kenny Bunkport to fly them around, right? And we'll fly them from the airport over to Kenny Bunkport. And there's a barracks there. And the barracks is where we all live. And it's on the grounds of the Bush compound. Okay. And whoever's telling the story said, this is just the kind of people there. So we're there on a Saturday. Thump, thump, thump on the door. Go answer the door. It's Barbara Bush. You know, good afternoon, ma'am. How are you? Is there something wrong? Is there something we can help you with? No. The president requests your presence for dinner. Oh, you know, ma'am, we're fine here. We don't. And then she's evidently Barbara Bush. She did not suffer. She did not suffer it well. She said, no. What part of the president of the United States would like you to join him for dinner? Didn't you understand there, Major? I believe I understood it all, ma'am. Very well. All right. 6 o'clock, or 1800, if that helps you out. And then she laughed. She said, "Don't be late, and come in your civilian clothes." And so, with that, she walked away. She said, and he said, and that would happen all the time. It was like we were part of their family. And when you were new, you introduced yourself, and they went around the table, and you know they welcomed you. He said, and I haven't had too much contact with the Clintons, but not the same kind of people, and the nation has no idea. So it's really interesting, guys, who kind of get to see behind the curtain, flying people around, and their thoughts on what had happened. So this is dedicated from all the people who served the Bush family, the elder Bush family. I'm not a fan of the younger, of the son, okay? So, but he was a quintessential public servant. And you just heard him talk about being shot down, how lucky he was, and how thankful he was. You know, his own life hanging in the balance, and a submarine surfaces and takes him in. So anyway, this is dedicated to the Bush family, their graciousness to everybody that they came in touch with who was serving the country, and their decency towards everybody.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain. It's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose. So you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
I'm just struck by President Bush's exact sentiment. It's what Jack Riley just articulated. And if you've heard Jack Riley speak, a lot of common themes you will hear in the things that come out of his mouth that you heard come out of President Bush, the elder's mouth.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds, and win. You got to win.
All right, we'll check the weather real quick. Currently in Quantico, sunny and 53. Camp Lejeune is cloudy and 65. Granbury, Texas, cloudy at 47. 29 Palms, clouds and 40. What the hell? Camp Pendleton, clouds at 40. Okinawa, Japan, dark, cloudy, and 76. The Al Anbar province of Iraq is dark, cloudy in 63. The Helmand province of Afghanistan is dark, clear in 53. At the home of All Marine Radio, the Costa Mesa, Newport Beach area of Southern California, it is cloudy and 50 degrees. Looking for a high of 66 today. Yikes. 68 tomorrow. 62 on Wednesday with a 90% chance of rain. What? Not sure what's going on here, folks. Not good. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll check some news headlines. And a buddy of mine, Terry Walsh, former Marine officer, combat engineer, now is in business. So we're going to talk, we'll talk with him. He's looking to hire Marines in the Southern California area. So if you know any of them, and they happen to make their living driving trucks or dispatching them, they should listen. Or you should let them know. One of the two. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it. The All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a group can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good. Past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara.
and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle bells. It is Christmas after all. Put my Christmas lights up. Colleen, conducting special operations up on the roof, which she loves. My job is the planner and making sure, right, you can only have three of those things plugged into each other now.
Jingle bell time is a swell time to go gliding in the one horse sleigh. Giddy up, jingle horse, pick up your feet. Jingle up around the clock.
One of my favorite.
Mix and a mingle and the jingle, yeah, and feet.
So my job is, I do the planning, right? All that kind of, the electricity, I have to plan for. Because it takes more than three strands, and the motif of this year's exterior Christmas lights are the big lights, okay? White, red, green, white, red, green, white, red, green, white, red, green, white, red, green. So then you got to coordinate where they come together to make sure that sequence continues. And then you got to be able to, like, after three, right, you got to run another power source, hide it behind a bush or something like that that goes near the roof, and then make sure it goes to the end. So that's my, I do that planning. And then got everything all ready. And so, that was my contribution. One of my many contributions. Got the Christmas tree, outdoor lights, Christmas tree, and but 40 feet of like lights. You would think that would go around a Christmas, you know, your basic 7-foot Christmas tree, often enough to go from top to bottom. Yes. No. Yeah, go figure. Okay, let me get my favorite Christmas music, okay? It's not Alvin and the Chipmunks either. This is one of my favorites, all right?
I'll have a blue Christmas without you.
Elvis, come on.
I'll be so blue just thinking about you. Decorations of red.
Lip all curled and everything.
Won't be the same, dear, if you're not here with me. And when the blues.
All right, so that's one. The here's another one. Come on, you know I'm a Springsteen guy. Springsteen has one of the best. I like this song. Who's this, Brenda Lee?
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop. Mistletoe hung where you can see every couple tries to stop. Rocking around the Christmas tree, let the Christmas spirit ring. Later we'll have some pumpkin pie and we'll do some caroling. You will get a little feeling when you hear voices singing, let's be jolly, death love with the house of holly, rocking around the Christmas.
I like that. I like this one too. Oops.
You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why.
Why?
Santa Claus is...
It's the wrong version.
Gather round. He's making a list, checking it twice. He's going to find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town.
All right, that's not really the version that I was looking for. This is... Come on, the jingle of Santa's sleigh.
The wind's whipping down the boardwalk. Hey, Dan! You guys know what time of year it is? What time, huh?
Come on, put you in the Christmas mood immediately.
What? Oh, Christmas time!
Even got some flashing lights to put around the dog bowls and the dog water. So that Jack and Joe were in... Oddly enough, you know, you know, people buy costumes for dogs. I don't know, we got one a few years ago, and it's a Santa costume. And my dog Jack, he loves, you know, you put dogs in that most of the time, and all they try to do is get it off. Not Jack, man. He loves that thing. He'll wear it for days. We'll check some news headlines. My friend Terry Walsh is going to come on, and we'll talk about getting jobs. He's running a business here in Southern California, so we'll talk about that, and we'll also talk about get his thoughts on the passing of President Bush. So here on a Monday, President's body has left. The funeral home where it was being prepared, it's now en route to an airport in Houston. I'm not sure what the name of the Houston airport is, but I can tell you this thing. That the Houston Police Department has the interstate closed down. What's pretty amazing, though, to watch is cars going the other way. Have pulled over, and people have got out of their cars on the median, and some look like they're taking pictures, others out of their car, and watching. So anyway, I'll go through a couple of headlines here. Over the weekend, the 5th Fleet commander was found dead in his home, Vice Admiral Scott A. Sterney assumed command of the 5th Fleet and Naval Forces Central Command in May. It's arguably one. Short of being a CNO, the biggest, most visible job in the combat Navy. No further comment and no further news has been released. He's born and raised in Chicago, commissioned in the Navy in 1982, commissioned a naval aviator 2 years later. Served in numerous strike fighter squadrons, flying F-18 Hornets. Chief of Staff of the Joint Task Force in Afghanistan. He was the operations officer previous to that for U.S. Central Command. Every one of those is an assignment filled with incredible amount of stress and big big requirements. So, not exactly sure how a guy like that takes his own life, commits suicide. The So, and there's a litany of things that, go through your head. When I heard he was found dead in his home, that's the first thing I said. I said to Patrick, my son, I said, I wonder if it was suicide. A little bit too young to die of natural causes, but it happens. And then within a few hours, the news that, he had committed suicide. So, and then after that, was it a personal issue in some way, shape, or form? Could he have been compromised? What would cause a man with that kind of a record, who's lived that kind of life, to take his own life? So I think we all sit here and wait for answers. That in the news. There's a whole series of, stories about, and I'll go just to, I'll go through the headlines real quick. DOD gets a request for 4,000 more troops to stay at the Mexican border. Not 4,000 more, but 4,000 troops. There's more than 4,000 down there now. They stay on the Mexican border through January 31st. Series of stories about the president of the from the Secretary of Defense. One, Putin tried to muck around in the U.S. midterm elections, and he said that obviously leader of Russia is not very quick on the uptake, because his actions are galvanizing increased military spending and a unification of NATO that hasn't occurred in a long time. So Secretary of Defense quoted there, Mattis is fixed for civilian military divide. Stop being jerks. The Defense Secretary thinks that Americans need to respect each other more before they can understand and appreciate, I would say, each other, and I'm sure that's the vein he casted in. Article about, is Trump really going to cut the defense budget, or is it a military tactic, or is it a negotiating tactic? And then the last story, headline from Marine Corps Times this morning, is Mattis sees progress in Afghanistan, but no plans for troop drawdowns. So, again, the whole question of what Afghanistan is. I like the way that I heard it phrased yesterday. There's essentially two bags. There's the denial mission that the United States fights against Al-Qaeda and ISIS there. And then there's the insurgency that, the Afghan troops fight against the Taliban and trying to, there's essentially two different fights that go on in Afghanistan. And I think both of them would color what quote unquote victory is. So that top five stories in Early Bird this morning, on a Monday morning, is number one is the Secretary of Defense's comments about that Russia tried to muck around in the U.S. midterm elections again. Number two, victims look to punish Iran for attacks against U.S. troops in Iraq. A lawsuit seeks to hold the Islamic Republic of Iran accountable to the tune of $10 billion for weapons, material, training, and other support that led directly to the death or mutilation of more than 1,000 U.S. troops from 2004 till 2011. We will see where that lawsuit goes. I would not hold out great hope for it. Number three, Navy's top commander found dead in his home. Number four, Taliban's shadow governor for Helmand killed in a U.S. airstrike. A shadow governor is, the Taliban has this thing, and they're referred to as shadow officials. And what happens is, even though they may not be able to walk into the office, they appoint a shadow governor of every province. They appoint a shadow mayor of different cities. Right, Mullah Abdul Mahan Akhund, the Taliban confirmed its shadow governor and military commander for Helmand was killed in an airstrike in the southern province last night. Manan was responsible for Taliban successes in Helmand that has left every district to be controlled or contested by the group. With great sadness, we received the news of the martyrdom of the governor of the Islamic Emirate of Helmand province and its military officer in brutal American bombing yesterday, the Taliban said in an official statement released on its Arabic language edition, Voice of Jihad. Maman's death was reported by the media office of provincial government of Helmand, which also claimed that two spokesmen identified as Hafiz Rashid and Mullah Jawid and his two guards were also killed, according to ATN News. The U.S. military confirmed the strike in a short statement. Quote, "The strike today was part of the Afghan operational design in our military pressure on the Taliban." The original report was that 29 plus Mullah Abdul Maman were killed in the strike, which is pretty unbelievable. You're going to have that kind of gathering, and somehow or other it's compromised. So so good news. Good news from Afghanistan. And then the final story is the headline is, "The days of secret military operations may soon be over. Does that matter?" In an age of social media and increasingly available connectivity, experts say it's becoming more and more challenging for the U.S. military to conduct operations under a cloud of darkness. Does that in fact matter? All right. There's another interesting headline here. I won't have time to go into it because we're going to take a break and then get Terry Walsh on. But the headline is "How the Taliban Gained the Upper Hand in a Key Province of Afghanistan." So, and the article centers around the death of six American troops, one a former Marine. And the region is the Ghazni region. It sits between Kabul and Kandahar. So as you leave Kabul, you head southwest, you go to Kandahar. As you leave Kandahar, you go west and you go to Helmand. So, how did that happen? So, interesting little story about that. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, you're going to meet another friend of mine, Terry Walsh. Terry from, the Binghamton, New York area. He now lives in Temecula. So we'll talk to him about his career, and he's got jobs. He's got jobs that he's looking for Marines to fill. So anyway, that's always a good thing. Don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Mac, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it. The McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the ReadBoard page at AllMarineRadio.com.